The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 527. It's the 8th of July, 2016. On the podcast today, I have Lincoln Moore, Executive Director of Dekel Oil, DKL. And he discusses their positive half-year production update. Also on the podcast, Louis Coetzee, CEO of Kibo Mining, KIBO, talks about the completion of the Mbeya Coal to Power Project Definitive Mining Feasibility Study and the MOU with Lake Victoria Gold to fast-track the development of the Imwiru Gold Project. Also on the podcast, the lady with the technicals, the Duchess of the Chart, Nicola Duke, looks at the following stocks: Highland Natural Resources, Glencore, Persimmon, CloudTag, Onzima Ventures. And also I've got today's suggested stock with potential, which is Harvest Minerals, HMI, suggested by Greg. And I've also got the broker buys and sells.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Executive Director of Dekel Oil. That's DKL ticker. It's Lincoln Moore. Thanks for coming back on, Lincoln.
Hello, Justin. Thanks for having me.
Now, you've released some very positive results yesterday, and I want to go through those. But for new listeners or people, you know, intending to get in on the story here, what does Dekel Oil do, Lincoln?
Justin, we are a profitable palm oil producer in the Ivory Coast. We operate one of the largest mills in West Africa, capable of producing 70,000 tonnes of crude palm oil per annum. You know, we're very quickly increasing our production. We had 35,000 tonnes of production last year, and obviously we'll talk about a significant increase production in the first half of this year. So we built the platform, and we're now growing organically and building sizable profit gains and very cash flow positive. So that's the story for us at this stage.
Yeah, and I've got to say, every time you've come on, you've sort of almost signposted the way it's going and how things are going and progressing, and you've pretty much stuck to that plan. The half-year production update, it's no exception. So let's go through some of the highlights here, Lincoln, please.
Sure, Justin. We had a material increase in our production for the first half. We produced 28,550 tonnes of crude palm oil, which is about 30.75% higher than we achieved for the first 6 months of last year. So fantastic result, and obviously that's flowed through to kernel production being up 27% as well. So in terms of the like-for-like production, a significant increase on last year, and really pressing towards, as well, obviously our goal is to get the mill to full capacity, but it's still at 65% capacity, so plenty of room for organic growth to come. We also had really our first meaningful results from the kernel crushing plant, which commenced operations in November last year, and you know, really excited about how that is going. We've produced nearly 2,000 tonnes of palm kernel oil and 2,360 tonnes of kernel cake, which you know, this year we'll see significant increase in profit from those two products, whereas in the last year we were only selling the raw product, the kernel, which didn't add as much value. So a fantastic situation from the production point of view.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I as a shareholder, when I'm reading through an update, a sentence like this is something I always want to see. And it says, as a result of a strong operational performance, the company expects EBITDA for the first half to be materially higher than H1 2015 EBITDA at €2.2 million. That's always nice to read, isn't it?
No, very, very good. Obviously, we're in a growth phase. So, you know, the goal is to ultimately, you know, take production and turn it into profit growth and then, of course, cash flow. So, you know, we obviously, it's a bit early to finalise numbers, and we'll be doing so with the interim accounts. But, you know, obviously we can state that our EBITDA will be materially higher than last year. And, you know, I guess if we look where we sit compared to the main forecasts in the market with Qantas. I mean, the key headline numbers with Qantas are 43,000 tonnes of crude palm oil production for the year. And as I say, we're tracking, you know, well and truly in line with that, with the 28,000 and a half for the first half. And we expect to meet that goal and aiming for an EBITDA of, you know, around about 6.5 to 6.7 million euros for the year. And, you know, we do, you know, obviously one benefit for us is Brexit actually worked in our favour, because as I say, we're profitable in euros, and as I look at the exchange rate back into pounds today, it's not good if you're going on holiday, but it's great for Decaloil. We're down to 1.16, and traditionally we trade at 1.3, 1.35, so we'll have a material benefit from the change in exchange rates between the euro and the pound. I mean, just to go into a bit more detail on the production, obviously we made some, you know, comments there about some of the regional issues. I mean, we, you know, certainly we're impacted slightly. I mean, we could have even done even better, we think, without the interference and what was going on in Nigeria, which had a, you know, period in our Q2 where they were effectively didn't import any basic food or very little basic food products because of the currency problems they were having. That's now been resolved, and Nigeria's floated their currency, and we're seeing, you know, the flow back through. So that certainly hampered. I think April was our best month in 2015, and it was probably the fifth best out of our six months this year. So we could have potentially overachieved even further, but notwithstanding, you know, fantastic result, 30% plus up, and you know, tracking well towards moving the mill towards its full capacity over the next couple of years.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? I know I'd be certainly pleased if I saw that sentence, materially higher. I always like to read that in any release. It's perfect. Excellent. So listen, if anyone needs any convincing, Lincoln, why they should put Decaloil Oil on their Vox Markets watchlist, could you give us three reasons, please?
Sure. I mean, obviously mindful the general market conditions and macro conditions are somewhat turbulent, and people are, of course, looking how to profit from that. I mean, clearly investing in companies with overseas income streams is one way to do well. And Decaloil, as I say, is in a euro profit producing company and is really benefiting from the strength of the euro against the pounds. I mean, just in terms of very basic valuation terms, stripping out all the growth opportunities for us, looking at the core mill and the core business, you know, we're tracking well, and I think, you know, the price, look at the stock price today, I think we're trading at around 6x EBITDA for 2016, and our company, which has zero corporate tax for 13 years. So I would imagine there's too many companies that trading at that lower multiple with zero tax, but also have very minimal capex or limited capex required, given that we're just in an organic growth phase for the production and therefore profitability. So you know, it's a very good story to come into now and benefit from the, you know, obviously continued profit growth. You know, clearly this will culminate in what we're doing with this profit, and, you know, as we've indicated previously, the company intends to reinvest some, but also implement a dividend policy. And, you know, we're close to being in that position. You know, we've obviously sort of indicated that the 2016 financial year end is where we'd like to commence a dividend policy, and the yield profile on the basis of the current stock price looking forward is very attractive, and I think probably one of the top five or so on AIM for my analysis in terms of potential dividend growth. So very interesting stage to get involved.
Yes, it seems to me like the message is you're improving, there is room for improvement, and you are doing that.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, we're only in the second year of full production, and you know, we will continue to improve. I mean, we think, you know, if we look back at this year, you know, great result, 28,500 tons of crude palm oil, but you know, we'll learn from that, and without even any further natural growth, we would do better. to do better again. So that's certainly positive going forward. And we know we're growing into a market where there is more and more fresh fruit bunches coming available from our own estates, and also from the many, many smallholders who are now fertilising and harvesting more and planting more. So we're going to be sitting in a nice position with plenty of organic growth to come. So, yeah, very, very, very good, and always looking to improve.
Lincoln, good work. Speak soon, fella.
No, thanks, Justin. I appreciate your time.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Louis Coetzee, CEO of Kibo Mining. That's KIBO. Current share price, 5.88 pence. Market cap of 20.8 million. Thank you for joining me, Louis.
Hi, Justin. Nice to be talking to you again.
Yeah, well, listen, you've got a bit of news out, and we've got, you know, two bits of news to cover, really. But before we do that, if you can give a brief summary for new listeners as to what Kibo is all about, please, Louis.
Well, just to cover that again quickly, Kibo is a multi-commodity exploration and development company, more emphasis on development with all our projects in Tanzania. At this point in time, we have three flagship projects that we are developing. The one is our Haneti Nickel project. Then there's also the Imweru Gold project, on which we've recently signed the MOU with Lake Victoria Gold. And then there's, of course, the Mbeya Coal to Power project, on which we've released an RNS again this morning, where we're developing a coal-fired mine mouth 300 megawatt power station.
That's right. Well, let's go through some of the details in that. And I see you've improved the internal run rate and impact. Take us through it, Louis, if you can.
Well, the important thing was when we did the pre-feasibility study, was that's all the heavy lifting as far as the feasibility is concerned happens during the feasibility, specifically on the mining side. So the feasibility side, the definitive feasibility, was more focused on the detailed design based on the results of the pre-feasibility study, but also, and this is very important, on the demands, on the requirements from the definitive feasibility study on the power station, because we have to be very sensitive for that. So it was one, a detailed design of the mine itself, but also an integration of the with the requirements of the power station. So the results that we put out this morning was all about that. And as we've said in the RNS, we're very pleased with that. It accurately correlated and confirmed the results that we announced in the pre-feasibility study. And in a number of areas, we saw really good improvements, like on the internal rate of return, where we now have a 69%, 15% increase on the IRR, which is critical when we come to funding. We also had an improvement on the payback period, which is very important. We had a better understanding. A decrease in the volume of coal, and that might sound a little bit tricky to people, but that's really important because we have to look at this as part of the integration. The decrease in the volume of coal that we produce brings along a lot of efficiencies and effectiveness in the overall integrated project. And although it means that we will be producing less coal, it means huge cost savings on the power side, increased profitability on the integrated project, and most importantly, a big improvement or big gain on the environmental impact side of it as well. And then, of course, lastly, it also confirmed, which was really important as well, that the mining method that we opted for in the pre-feasibility study is indeed the most efficient and effective way to mine that resource.
Yeah, because, I mean, whenever someone reads something like reduction, they think, uh-oh, problem. But in this aspect or respect, it's very good, isn't it? The coal requirement reduced by 23%. It helps with costs. And like you just said there, it's a positive thing, isn't it?
Oh, it is very positive. It is indeed very positive, because we have to understand that we have to balance the interests of two parties now. This is economics 101, where you always have to forego on something in return for something else. Now, we have to balance the interests of both entities here, the power plant and the mine, and make sure that they stay very profitable, both of them. But the integrated project, that's the important thing. That's what we need to know and what we need to understand. So there's a bit of a trade-off here. But as I said, on the economics of it, in the overall side of the project, it brings about significantly better profitability overall, or better financial and cost indicators. But this is the really important thing. In this project, we also know that from a funding point of view, the environmental impact is a sensitive issue, and everything that we possibly can do to limit and reduce the environmental impact is really, really important. And it also has a cost impact as well, because the more we are able to reduce environmental impact, the less cost and the less money we have to spend on mitigating those environmental impacts. So all in all, that particular result is actually something that we're particularly pleased about.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes it's easy with the sort of, you know, Imbert coal to power projects, sort of taking center stage a little bit. But I think some people forget you've got a range here of assets, and also, especially with the gold price, which it is at the moment, I think what we haven't covered, which is quite important, is the MOU recently done with Lake Victoria Gold. And so, can you take us through that as well, please, Louis?
Yeah, I think the important or the critical thing that we need to understand in that MOU is the decision or the agreement that was reached between Lake Victoria Gold and Kibo to bring our two assets together. And the reasons for that are obvious, because the two assets together brings us into a position where we are within a realistic reach of 1 million ounce and bigger deposit. And we're also in a situation where we can achieve 100,000 ounce per annum production rate. So both of those are two critical indicators in a project like this. But on top of that, we also have the benefit that where we are very strong on the exploration side in terms of expertise and skills, Lake Victoria is quite strong on the production side of it. And if we bring those two together, then we are in a position where we can, one, extend and grow the resource to the size that we believe it can be, which is substantially bigger than what it is now. And two, we can get it into production very quickly and in a very efficient manner. And lastly, Lake Victoria Gold already has a mining license. And if we bring these two projects together into one project, that mining license will cover both, which means that we can get into production even quicker, or of course subject to funding.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Okay, so when you say into production quicker, what time, you know, frame are you looking at?
Well, at the moment, and this is a bit difficult to put a very definitive timeline on it, because as we bring these assets together, as we convert them or transform them into one resource, we all also have to do adjustments and redesign in terms of the feasibilities that we've respectively done on our individual resources. Now, depending on what comes out of that, we expect to see a situation where we can be in production within 12 to 18 months from funding, from the point where the project is funded.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, and what next can we expect from Kibo, Louis?
Well, what we are doing at the moment is, obviously, we are working very hard on completing the integrated bankable feasibility on the MCPP, on the Mbeya Coal to Power project. That is in its final stages. We're just doing the final work on that, as we stated in the RNS this morning. There's a myriad of activities surrounding that now that we've completed the two main feasibility work streams, meaning the power definitive feasibility and the mining definitive feasibility. There's a lot of commercial activity that we're working on at the moment and taking a lot of our time and resources. Concurrently, we are also working on finalizing the definitive agreement with Lake Victoria Gold, so that we can get on with that project and realize that in terms of what we intend to do with that one. So we would like to see that in production sooner than later. And then in the background, we have a bit of spare time and a spare resource. We're also continuing to do further development of our Haneti project, the nickel project.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you've got spare time, yeah, absolutely. you seem quite busy as it is. Okay, Louis, well, listen, if anyone needs any more convincing, could you give us three reasons why we should put Kibo Mining on our watch list?
I think, as I've said in the past, when we were when we had our conversations, I think there's the first thing is the fact that there are very few companies, in my opinion, that have assets at the development stage where we are, that are poised to take advantage of a recovering market in the way that we have our projects. Secondly, the fact that they are in a mining-friendly jurisdiction, in a place that is also very, very friendly towards foreign direct investment, and where the mining sector is particularly well developed. And thirdly, as I've said in the past as well, the combined skill set that we have to bring this to fruition and to bring it to the point where we can actually realize the value for our shareholders. In this regard, I think the fact that we've been able to bring the Mbeya Coal to Power project in one of the most difficult markets to where it is now is testimony to the ability of the team to realize projects.
Marvellous. Thank you, Louis. And like I said, you're always busy, so look forward to speaking to you again in the near future.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
It's a Friday, so joining me on the podcast right now is the lady with the technicals, the Duchess of the Chart. It's Nicola Duke. You all right, Nick?
Hello. Yes, very good, thanks.
Okay, what are your thoughts on the market here? It's an odd situation.
Yeah, you know, when you think about everything that's happened in the last 2 weeks, it's really astonishing that it's not worse, don't you think?
Yeah,
it's all pretty calm, isn't it?
Ominously so, I think.
We have no government.
I think it's worrying that we are like this. It's almost like saying, now we've got no government, the market's rallying. they've held us back all this time. That's the problem.
Yeah. We have no government. We are leaving the European Union. It turns out that for the last 12 years, we've been fighting a war that we should never have started. And yeah, great, isn't it?
Yeah, great. Well, do you know what? I'm quite concerned over the markets, and I've put sort of, for the first time, I've put stop limit or trailing sell orders on some of my bigger stocks. I do think we're not going to be up here for a long time. I think the market will grind lower eventually, to the point that there'll be bargains, and I want some cash. I'm just wary of the market. It's like, you know, we everything's down apart from, you know, they're saying that the fundamentals of the economy are getting worse, but they're going to pump some more money in, so it's going up. And I just think, well, this is not based on any fundamental at all. So, you know, you can't keep, you know, pumping the market all the time. It just doesn't work. If we're going to have a crash, I think it's going to be massive, you know?
Right.
Anyway.
Well, today we have NFP.
Yeah.
Non-farm payrolls. My charts say we might have a bit of a big number.
Yeah, well, last week was ridiculously low, wasn't it? It was like 35,000 when it's predicted to be 150
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, like revisions or something.
Yeah, yeah. So we should see an uptick in that. Okay. Anyway, let's look at some individual stocks as suggested by people listening to the podcast on Twitter. So first and foremost, what was suggested there? Let's have a look. It was Highland Natural Resources, HNR. And they've had a storming run, but they've come back a bit recently. So
this stock really moves. So we've only been trading since March, haven't we? Mm-hmm. Big rally. So we've got a harmonic pattern, and we're going to come back and test that March high support. And we've got a really interesting buy level around 1825 to 1845. We need to come back a little bit lower at 22.5 at the moment.
Okay.
So if you're long, you know, you need to endure a little bit more pain. If you're not, and you're thinking about this one, like, yeah, this is like a really good place to buy.
Okay, cool.
A really good harmonic pattern. Everything lines up there. Previous high. I kind of really like it. So so mark your charts around 1825, 1845. I think this is a great buy.
Yeah, okay. Next one, bigger stock here is Glencore, so obviously a commodity player. And, look at that fall off they had a while back. I remember that happening, 25% in one day, which is big for a big company. That's a big drop. And you'll see that in penny stocks, you know, not often, but you will see it. But in a big stock like Glencore, didn't happen. That was back in, 2015, ninth month somewhere there. And it went up, come back, tested that low, didn't it, 68 pence. And then all of a sudden it's grind up higher now. Now, where are we now? 166. What do you reckon?
So, yeah, you know, really this one's sold since it started in 2011, hasn't it? But I really like this. So the rally that we've had from January, I like this to do another leg or duplicate. And I think that we're going to the mid 200s, so 250. The problem is that at the moment we're in this consolidation zone, you know, in between sort of 175 and sort of 125. We've got this sort of £50 consolidation zone. I really do think that we'll break out of it. There is resistance at 180 that we need to clear properly to continue higher, but if we do, then we're going to 250. And all the moving averages, you know, the weekly has turned up and crossed, and the daily has done that in the last 2 weeks. Everything says that we should keep going, and even if we get a dip back, you know, there's good support at 155 and 147. So stops need to be low below that, but I really do think this will continue higher.
Yeah, it's failed twice at this 172, 173 level, hasn't it, in the last couple of months? So it'd be interesting to see if it clears.
It has, but you know, the Fibonacci level is a little bit higher. Okay. So when I see that, sometimes that means, oh, it's going to have a breakout, trick everybody long, and then fall back and kill them all. And so that's why I'm warning that the Fibonacci level is just a bit higher, so be careful of a false break that fails, and then once it's everybody's got fed up with this stock, it will then go. It just looks like one of those really good trap setups, especially as it's, you know, because it's a big name and it's well traded, you know, the money players will play tricks like that. So.
Okay, all right, the next one, it's a big house builder, and I slipped this one in, to be honest, Persimmon, because I bought it the other day, 2 days ago, just below 13 quid, PSN, a house builder. Of course, they all fell. Exactly the same charts on all house builders. If you look at them, they're like this big gap down on the 23rd of, on the 24th of June, just a day after the Brexit, of course, of EU vote. We haven't Brexited yet. But what do you reckon here?
Yeah, you know, I'm not, I wouldn't buy Berkeley, which is very London-centric and luxury home. But Persimmon isn't like that. And technically, this is trying to recover on a monthly chart. It's, I think if we don't break the June lows, that we're going to get at least another leg higher, and we're going to retest that broken support around 1,750, 1,780. So that's what I'm looking for. The, you know, the price action on a weekly, like weekly hammer, holding a weekly 200 moving average and holding on to the 38 fib, to me looks pretty good. It's done a 50. If you look on a monthly, if everybody gets a monthly chart out, and you look from the December 2008 low to the high that we made in March, we've retraced 50% exactly and found buyers. So to me, you know, it's not too bad at all, this one. I think it has a good shot of another leg higher. You know, and the government might just wake up with this Brexit vote. We might actually get somebody in charge that says, you know what, maybe part of the problem is there aren't enough houses and we better build some more.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you know what the dividend yield on these now? I'm trying to look it up because they pay a good dividend, and they've also, you know, stood by, you know, returning a lot of capital to the shareholders. And I think it's around 8%. So, I'm in there for a little bit of time there. You know, I'm prepared to go lower and put some more in, because I just think, you know, it's 8%. That's a good return on your money, that, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me have a look there. Dividend yield.
If nothing else, I really like this as a bounce play. You know, the 50, the fact that it bounced so well off a 50% retracement, the daily RSI momentum indicators are really oversold and turning up again. You know, I think it'll go 1,600, probably higher.
Okay, okay, cool. And the next is, I'm trying to find it here, but it's CloudTag. It's a very popular stock, this, and it's about, you know, sort of Fitbits.
Actually, we've got two more. We've got Onzima too.
Yes, that's right, yes. But the next one is CloudTag, CTAG. And what do you think about this, Nicola?
Yeah, CloudTag has done exactly the same. If you draw, if you measure from the February low to the June high, we've retraced 50% and bounced. I think there's a danger that the support is a little bit lower at 3.4, but we haven't quite bottomed on an RSI yet. But I like it. I think, you know, has really good potential. We're just a little bit too far away from the 200 moving average for me to go wahoo, you know, because I think you're always safer when the closer to it the when you buy. But yeah, like I think from here we could, if you draw a trend line on a 4 hour, an hourly chart from that June high, when it breaks that, I think we're going higher and I think you can say we're bottom. Or if we get a daily close above the 20 moving average. The 20 moving average is at 4.95. So I would say a daily close at five or higher would also say bottoms in and we're going up.
Okay. And it's nowhere near
those two things.
It's not good enough for you to go wahoo. And I quite like
But it definitely has potential.
Yeah, yeah. Is it potential for you to say wahoo?
Wahoo! Yeah, okay. Like, I mean, four is good support. If you look back in 2014, you know, in April and in May and June, that was the low. You know, it might, I just think there's a risk it might dip to 3.4.
Okay, cool. And last one, not least, Onzima, O-N-Z. And what do you think, Nick?
Yeah, this one has bottomed. I think we can say that for sure. Head and shoulders bottom, broke out long, hit our first Fibonacci target from the last time we looked at it. It's now a bit, you know, even on a weekly, it's overbought. It's got to work that off and come back. There's support at 131, which is that previous high from February. But it might come all the way back to the neckline or the one sort of 110 area.
Wow.
It's definitely a buy on a dip, but it's not a buy here.
All right. Marvellous stuff. Thank you very much, Nicola. And Nick will be sending me the charts, I hope.
I will. Yes.
Yeah, lovely. And they are annotated as normal, so you can look at the charts and listen to the podcast and see exactly what Nicola's talking about. Marvellous. Thank you, Nicola. Have a nice weekend.
Okay, bye.
Okay, today's penny stock with potential is Harvest Minerals, and I do hold a bit of stock in Harvest Minerals, I must admit that, and for interest of transparency. Can you see through me? HMI is ticker, Harvest Minerals. What do they do? They are a potash and phosphate exploration and development company with projects located in Brazil. The group has three principal fertilizer projects, the Sergei Potash Project, the Capella Potash Project, and the Arapa Fertilizer Project. How many shares does the company have in issue? Around about 94 million shares. Let me just check that. 94 million shares. And they're listed both in the AXS and AIM, but they are coming off the ASX, which will save on costs. So I'm just looking up there. Yeah, 94 million shares in issue. And how much cash or debt do the company have? In their quarterly report for the quarter ended 31st of March 2016, they had 3.6 million Aussie dollars, which is around 2.1 million pounds. There's three reasons why you think this company has potential. Number one, on the 16th of June, they announced that their independent JORC compliant indicated and inferred mineral resource estimate had been completed for the company's 100% owned Mandacaru phosphate project in Cereza in state Brazil. The project contains compliant total resource of 4.38 million tonnes at 4.55 P2O5, that means, which includes an indicated resource of 1.4 million tonnes at 5.3% P2O5 and an inferred resource of 2.91 million tonnes at 4.1% P2O5. The project has an estimated additional exploration potential of 4 million tonnes of phosphate ore with similar grades from the extension of the estimated mineralized layers to be proven up by further exploration assessment. Reason two, separately, the company is pleased to report that the development of the Arapua project is on track and the company expects to shortly announce the resource associated with its drilling program conducted in Q1 2016. Additionally, the company is working with the GE21 in the preparation of a scoping study. The company anticipates substantial forward movement in relation to Arapua during Q3, which we're now in, aren't we? And in 2016. Are we in Q3? Yeah. And so news imminent. And number three, Brazil is the largest potash importer with the third largest potash consumer in the world. 90% of the potash is imported, and the remaining 10% is produced by Vale, or Vale, they're a big company, by the way, on adjacent block to the company's Sergipe potash project. So, you know, Vale is right next to them, which proves it's a working project there. And fertilizer demand in Brazil is estimated to grow twice as fast as overall global demand from now until 2025. So thanks for that, Greg. That's Harvest Minerals. Worth putting on your watch list, I'd say. Just go to voxmarkets.co.uk/company/HMI, or just click the link here on the blog post here, which is at voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Click the blog there, and there's a link there. But they're called Harvest Minerals. Here are the broker forecasts. Buys. Liberum Capital has initiated coverage of Jewels Group with a buy rating, price target 2.20. Berenberg has upgraded Inchcape to buy, price target 760. Goldman Sachs has upgraded Tullow Oil to buy, price target 270. And the sells, they're all sort of London-based property, or with a focus on London. XN BNP Paribas, they've got it in. Is it all downgrades by XN BNP Paribas? British Land, underperform, price target 520. Derwent London, underperform, price target 2270. Downgrade Great Portland Estates to underperform, price target 540. They've also downgraded Land Securities Group, underperform, price target 890. And downgraded Shaftesbury, underperform, price target £7.60. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.